Hi, folks. First, let me apologise for this week's episode coming to you a couple of days late. Just we've been waiting on some little bits of music that we can pepper throughout this week's episode. So apologies that we are bringing it to you late, but better late than never. Thank you so much for joining me, Edith Bowman, for another episode of Soundtracking, my weekly podcast where I get to dive into the world of film and music and TV. And as I've said before on the show, it's so wonderful where we get to make the choices about what we talk about. And sometimes there are films that just really, I don't know, capture our imagination or impress us that we want to shout about them. And this week is a really good example of that because our latest episode of Soundtracking sees us joined by two great friends who scooped the Camera d'Or at Cannes last year for their best first feature. Riley Keough and Gina Gamel co-wrote, produced and directed War Pony, which tells the kind of overlapping stories of two young men on the Pine Ridge Reservation, brilliantly played by Jojo Baptiste Whiting and, apologies for my terrible pronunciation, Ladanian Crazy Thunder. It comes out in the cinemas in the UK and Ireland this Friday, so the 9th of June. I know there's some previews here, there and everywhere, but if I can highly encourage you to go and see this film, please do. It's a really immersive experience. It's kind of one of those films where you go, am I watching real life happen? They've done such a fantastic job capturing these non-actors in real life situations that tell a really honest and at times brutal story, but an honest story. So War Pony is in cinemas as of this Friday, and I highly recommend that you go and see it. It's scored by Christopher Stracey and Mato Oyuhi, and we'll begin with the cue Stealing from Dad. Thank you so much for your time and congratulations on this extraordinary film. I felt so many emotions, different emotions watching this film. I felt so connected to, you took us right into this landscape and these stories and these lives so brilliantly and honestly. Yeah, I was kind of, had palpitations at point of kind of fear for them. So it was such a physical response. So congratulations, it's a brilliant film.
Well, thank you so much. That means so much to us.
I know we've not got loads of time, but the story of this is just beautiful in itself in terms of the collaboration and how this film and this story came from truth. And I believe that kind of goes back to, Riley, when you were filming American Honey with Andrea back in 2015 and meeting Frank and Bill for the first time, who were extras. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, they came to set to potentially be extras and they weren't totally convinced. And so I kind of spent time with them and we hung out for a while. And then I don't know, after we spent time together, they decided that they would be extras in the film. And we just ended up spending the day together, basically.
What was the point where, in terms of you and Gina getting together and this being the thing that you wanted to take forward, that there was a story to tell and that you wanted to collaborate on this? What was the point of kind of, I guess, realization that this was something that you were going to work together on as a film?
I think that there wasn't one moment. It just was this sort of energy that took us along for this ride that we couldn't stop. And that was our friendships. And then into this, the writing of the film, like there really was not a point where we said, let's write a movie and had this like idea. It just started happening. It felt in a way like we didn't have control over it. It was just this beautiful thing that happened with our friends and us and this collaboration that just naturally happened. And it felt like it was going to move forward whether or not we wanted it to or not. You know, there were moments where we quit on it and it just kept moving. It was like really, in hindsight, like beautiful and kind of spiritual and felt like the universe was kind of a part of the process in a way.
That landscape and that world that we're taken into is such a physical experience. Gina, in terms of kind of really working out how you would tell the story visually, even that was collaborative, wasn't it?
For sure. I think that approach, this kind of like checking in and building everything together, was really the core of the collaboration. It's like it wasn't one part of the filmmaking process that wasn't a conversation and wasn't truly a collaboration. I think Billy was very vocal about what he didn't want visually, like, and I think that both of them, you know, we had many conversations about not wanting to add any more grit or any more texture than's already there, like be very honest with our photography. We took that really seriously, and I think that we made decisions like not to go handheld and to be very clean with our camera movement and very intentional with the way the camera moves and very, very honest with our framing. And I think that that came very much from Billy and Frank and from what they wanted and what they didn't want.
I think we also liked the challenge of like trying to make a film that felt how you would expect it, as naturalistic and authentic as films with first-time actors feels, while also, you know, shooting coverage and having setups and staying on script. We were kind of like, oh, let's try and get this result, but also shoot it, you know, how I shoot a movie typically, and not like find it in the moment and have it prepared. And that I think that challenge was something that we were kind of like, this could be very cool if we could execute that.
Well, I wanted to ask in terms of the community that we see, you know, these characters live in on Pine Ridge Reservation. It doesn't feel like you had to do much in terms of, and I, you know, that's probably down to a great production designer as well in terms of the authenticity. But just following on from what you were saying there, it feels, everything just feels so real. We feel like we're watching real people in a real environment, a real situation, going through real things.
That was kind of the idea, was to be as authentic as we could and truthful in the script and in the, you know, production design. And if we didn't have to change anything, we definitely wouldn't have. But also our production designer was, you know, our whole crew really was very on board with that and leaving what we could and using what was there. And also like making friends within the community and incorporating the community as much as possible. Like even with like finding vehicles, and our art department would kind of like make friends and find cars around town. And it felt like our crew was very, I don't know, it was also trying to use the community as much as possible and include the community and find things through friends and through Facebook. And it was very, felt very authentic to Pine Ridge in that way, which was cool.
How did you find that cast? Because those two characters, Bill and Matteo, I don't want to get the pronunciation.
Matteo.
The young kid who plays Matt, I mean, Bill's amazing. And two very different asks of actors, obviously different ages and stuff, but the young actor who plays Matteo, oh my God, where did you find him?
I think our trips, for years we were going just as ultimately, you know, extended holidays. We were just going to visit our friends and play with our friends. And then I don't know in which years of the 7 years, suddenly I think that we did, you know, start doing more intentional, okay, we're going to try and get this part of writing done or this. And I think as soon as we realized that maybe we were making a movie, those trips sort of became casting trips accidentally too. We just meet a lot of people. And I think when we were meeting people, you know, a lot of our cast were people that we just met in the street or met at someone's house, you know, and that's how a lot of our cast came to be. And for Matteo, I think that we had, because we were there for so long, we had a problem of kids and family friends kind of aging out of roles, you know, like that we had. And so I think that for him and Bill, like Jojo, who plays Bill, they were really our two final hires. Like we kind of had built a lot around them, and we had ideas of people who could do it. But with both of them, I think when we sat with them, we knew straight away that they were the ones. And he came from a friend of ours. We were kind of describing the character and saying, this is what we're looking for. And she just showed us a picture. And she said, she's a teacher at one of the schools. And she's like, there's this one kid, he's really special. And I was like, I want to talk to him. And at the time he was 11, and we weren't on the reservation, but our casting director, Eleanor Hendricks, was on the reservation. And she said, I'm going to meet him today. And he was a bit late. And we were like, where is he? And she's like, oh, his dad said he's driving to me now. This boy's 11. And so he drove himself to his audition at 11. And I think that that was a signal to us. I was like, oh, this might be our kid. And then we saw him. He was amazing.
Yeah, he's extraordinary. What a find. When it came to music as well, I mean, the music's a real kind of character in the film as well. And that Annie Lennox cover moment is genius. I burst out laughing. And she sings it so beautifully. But it's just, Oh, it was brilliant. What just in terms of the choices on that, but then also working with you know, with your composers, with Christopher and Matto on the music within the film, which has got this lovely connection with the culture, but then it also has this fantastic, almost like thriller element to it, and also that kind of diegetic music as well of what they listen to. There's a big conversation around music in terms of the choices and stuff.
For the music, like all of the you know, needle drop, the diegetic music in the film, like that was so led by Frank to start with, and then it transferred into like LaDainian and JoJo. JoJo exclusively listens to NBA YoungBoy and XXX, and so I think that that became the soundtrack to the film. And I think that we made a choice of like, we know what we listen to on repeat on hour long car rides, and so, and it's not like a different artist every time we're in the car, it's the same artist and the same songs, and with, you know, and I think that we, that became part of the storytelling, I think, is that when you have those artists in your coming of age, that just inspires you and you want to listen to a record until it's dead. We kind of made it a part of, it was, you know, very much a part of the storytelling for us. Sometimes I don't let go, I shine out of your voice. It's back as of your hoes, watching from the outside. Sometimes I don't let go, I shine out of your voice. It's back as of your hoes, watching from the outside. And I'm on your thotty mind, but I don't wanna cause I got a wife. Playing with the pity through the day and night. Playing with a mind and a beat, oh I. So they wanna swallow up the meat, oh I. So they wanna swallow up the meat, oh I. Hey, yeah. Sometimes I don't let go. I shine out of your voice. It's back cause of your hoes. Watching from the outside. And then with Annie Lennox, I think that we struggled with that one for a long time. I think we went through a lot of different songs. And I think that we were just driving with our producer one day to set, and the song came on. We were like, what if she sings this? And we all laughed. And when we all laughed, it kind of was the one that we went with. And then Matto and Christopher, I don't want to speak for them because they had, you know, a very special collaboration. But I think that they, you know, Matto's he's a Lakota man, and his father's from Pine Ridge, and I think that he, you know, he's an incredible musician and he's doing so well right now with all his endeavors since this. I don't want to speak for them, so I don't really know what to say about their club, but I think that all we said is we wanted, like, we never wanted the music to be the thing that's influencing the emotion. We wanted the music to be a release of the emotion, and I think that that was kind of the conversations we had over and over is how and how do we make it feel distinctive and make it feel like part of this world and not alien to the world? And I think that they did a really beautiful job with that.
Amazing job. The cue is, well, it's a song actually, when Matto is at the fire and the kind of vocals.
Yeah, I know the one.
That's a traditional song that Matto is singing. And then I think that him and Christopher, they layered it and melodized it and created kind of a chorus out of his voice. And I think that And it's, I think it's the same with the film. And I think this is part of Christopher Amato's approach, was taking something traditional and taking something is ancient, you know, that is has been with the ancestors, and then this a young Indigenous man, like, kind of reimagining it, you know, in a way. I think that was so much the approach to the score, of how do we take traditional elements and reimagine it in a way that feels modern, in a way that feels appropriate to this film and to the right now of Bill and Frank's story.
It's beautiful. That end track as well.
Coffee St. Marie.
Oh.
Yeah, beautiful.
So good. So yeah. Good. We're being wrapped up sort of thing, but I'm going to try and get some time with Christopher and Matt. It would be amazing to talk to them about the journey of the music as well, yeah, on this. But Riley, can I just say as well, Daisy was phenomenal. Huge congratulations on that. You just did the
thank
most
you so much.
Phenomenal job with that character.
Thank you.
From watching all your brilliant little videos of the lead up to that and all the work you guys put into that, it pays off, because it's, yeah, I'm coming to the tour when you book those dates for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for watching.
No, it's great. And I'm excited to see what you got plans to do, you know, to work together on another film, because, you know, this clearly works, and you've just tapped into something that it's not often you come away from a film as well when you want to learn more, you know, in terms of, I went on a deep dive finding out about the kind of symbolic nature of the buffalo and the bison with this culture, and, you know, about this world and the land. And so thank you for inspiring me to learn more and fill my brain with some interest in history. But I'm interested to see what you do next.
Oh, well, thank you for being inspired, and thank you for watching our movie.
Great to chat to you both. Thank you so much.
You're not a dream, you're not an angel, you're a man. I'm not a queen, I'm a woman, take my hand. We'll make a space in the lives that we planned. And here we'll stay until it's time for you to go. Yes, we're different, worlds apart, we're not the same. We laughed and played at the start, like in a game. You could have stayed outside my heart, but in you came. And here you'll stay until it's time for you to go.
From the soundtrack to War Pony, that's Until It's Time For You To Go by Buffy St. Marie, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Riley Keough and Gina Gamo. I'm so excited to see what they do next, particularly just how they manage to capture beautiful characters and a fascinating story in this first feature of those. My huge thanks to them both for taking the time to talk to us. As mentioned, War Pony is out in cinemas in the UK and Ireland on Friday. Head to warpony.film for more information as to where it is showing. We mentioned American Honey during the interview, and if you wanted to hear my interview with Andrea Arnold about that film, just head to edithbowman.com, where you'll also be able to find every single other episode of the podcast. Follow us on socials, we're at Soundtracking UK, and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel for loads of extra content. Now, we've got loads of great stuff on the way, not least a show that is dedicated to the 50th anniversary of The Wicker Man, which is going to be out in cinemas on the 21st of June for one night only, celebrating that anniversary. And if you go along and see that, you'll also be able to experience a kind of special pre-show that I was lucky enough to host last month, actually, that's being kind of put together as a nice little bit of extra content for you if you go along. And there are lots of great guests and special surprises and music as part of that show. And we wanted to celebrate it on the podcast as well, so we have a special Wicker Man edition coming up for you in the next couple of weeks. But fingers crossed, an episode with the wonderful Daniel Pemberton talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. You kind of watch that first film and you go, how can they top it? Well, they've done it tenfold with this new film, and that also applies to Daniel's extraordinary score for this film. So I'm hoping, whether or not it's Daniel, we will be back next week with another episode of Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.